This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for listening. And I think there's a confluence of forces in the galaxy today. On the one hand, we've got Capitol Hill, an epic battle between the House of Representatives and the Internal Revenue Service, and the person of outgoing IRS head Stephen Miller going out with a bang before the House Ways and Means Committee.
First and foremost, as acting commissioner, I want to apologize on behalf of the Internal Revenue Service for the mistakes that we made and the poor service we provided.
The House committee today is looking into that IRS scandal on stalling or targeting the tax-exempt status of conservative political groups. That epic battle takes place on the very same day that Hollywood heads once again for the stars.
There's greatness in you, but there's not an ounce of humility. You think that you can't make mistakes, but there's going to come a moment when you realize you're wrong about that.
The lack of humility and mistakes of James T. Kirk, that's the narrative for this new Star Trek movie, while the narrative for the congressional hearings is the mistakes of Barack Obama's IRS. The president expressed a little humility over the whole affair yesterday.
It's inexcusable, and Americans are right to be angry about it, and I am angry about it. I will not tolerate this kind of behavior in any agency, but especially in the IRS.
But there is another bit of explaining the IRS needs to do, and we want to alert you to it. Oddly, it's a Star Trek thing. This guy you're going to hear is an IRS employee playing a Star Trek character in an Internal Revenue Service training video.
It would seem, Captain, the no taxions, lack of skilled tax leaders, has resulted in a widespread case of confusion. Uninformed taxpayers, high noncompliance, no strategic vision. I'm afraid without a wealth of skilled leaders, anarchy is spreading across the planet like a virus.
If you've been targeted by the IRS for your political beliefs, you probably don't feel terribly safe this week. But if you're a Star Trek fan, you are no doubt celebrating the release of the new Star Trek movie, Into Darkness. Full coverage right here on The Takeaway later this hour. But Into Darkness is perhaps an apt characterization of the scandal brewing at the IRS. Not that poorly timed leak to CBS News of the IRS Star Trek parody, of course. It's the question of whether the IRS favored or disadvantaged groups in their applications for tax-exempt status on the basis of political ideology, delaying the status for conservative groups while possibly greenlighting groups associated with liberal causes. Our contribution to this growing White House distraction? Well, to begin with, we're going to explore who gets tax-exempt status and why. Because of the Supreme Court's ruling in the 2010 Citizens United case, applications for tax-exempt status for politically active organizations have increased dramatically over the past few years. Joining us is Ken Gross, an election law expert and former counsel to the Federal Election Commission. Ken Gross, welcome.
Good to be here, John.
So in a perfect world, and a lot of people have so much contempt for the IRS, there is no such thing as a perfect world with the IRS, but in a perfect world, how should tax-exempt status be granted, and who would you expect to apply for this sort of thing?
First of all, there's a couple of different types of tax-exempt status. There's the one that we think of as a tax-exempt entity, and that's a charity. If we give to the American Cancer Society, to the Juvenile Diabetes Association, that is a 501c3 organization. Religions apply as well. It is a formal process with a form that you get granted, and it's a desirable thing to be because you can attract donations through tax-deductible status. The current controversy is not over those types of entities. The current controversy is over 501c4 organizations, which is another form of tax exempt, but very different than a charity because donations to it are not tax deductible to the donor. Much easier to get that status usually because there's no tax deduction for the donor. And those are the ones that the politically oriented groups go for because a C3 they would never get. That has no tolerance for any political activity.
So the donors don't get a deduction, but the organizations themselves are allowed to operate in a tax-exempt status in the incomes to their employees, that sort of thing?
No, the employees, of course, would have to pay taxes just like any other employee. If they earn some interest income, they wouldn't pay taxes, but that's minimal. The donations themselves are not considered taxable income, so that's helpful, obviously. They wouldn't have to book that as income.
So this exempt status for the 501c4s is an important exemption, but it's far short of a giant windfall.
Very much so. It's far short of a giant windfall. And as a matter of fact, it's so short of a giant windfall is that the IRS permits you to act as a 501c4 even if you don't apply for the status. You don't have to have the status granted. You can just operate as a 501c4 and file your annual tax returns as a C4 and go on your merry way. However, some groups like to show the letter that they have. I'm an official 501c4 organization.
All right, so let's stop for a second. So the groups that are crying foul here were able to operate as 501c4s. They just weren't able to show the paperwork for it, and they appear to have had some sort of difficulty on the basis of whether Tea Party was in their name or something like that. But as far as the status was concerned, they were able to use it.
They were able to operate and presumably did operate through the period that they got a lot of questions, which I'm sure many were inappropriate, as we have now seen, but it didn't stop them or even necessarily slow them down as an organization. And that's very important. If they wanted to become a flat-out political committee, you know, really, really advocate candidate elections, which some of these did, they could be a 527 entity, yet another political organization, which you don't have to apply for status. So this is a very easy environment to operate under without the formality of the IRS behind it.
Now, anyone who's been audited understands that the IRS is famous for a certain level of vigilance and skepticism about, you know, applications and details on the forms that you submit to the IRS. What is it about the questions that were asked here and the vigilance over these applications that is distinct from the general sense that the IRS is, you know, looking over every I and T and that sort of thing?
Well, in this particular case, the offensive questions were noxious in the sense that they were taking those that looked conservative, you know, that had Tea Party in the name, segregating those out and giving them extra attention in a bad way, you know, working them over with lots of questions, slowing down the process. But as I indicated before, these entities could operate without that status, number one. So this whole controversy comes down to one word, and it doesn't have tax in it. It's the word disclosure, because the benefit of being a 501c4 organization, as opposed to a political committee, which some of these entities may have looked like, is that you do not have to disclose your donors.
Ah.
And that's what this whole thing is about. One word, disclosure. If they were 527 entities, which are political committees, they would have to disclose their donors to the IRS. As a 501c4, they do not. And that's why they want to be in that box, not the political committee box.
So if the administration wanted transparency in all of these groups and said something to the IRS, hey, we want you to scrutinize these applications because we really want to see who's donating to these organizations, that would violate the political neutrality of the IRS that's in statute.
If they made those names public, you know, the IRS, within very great constraints, can ask about some donors. But there was no evidence or any action here of making any names public. It was really about their activities. In my view, what the IRS should have been putting its resources in is looking at the entities after the fact if there was some evidence of misconduct, because some of them were trying to shoehorn political activity into a C4. It is permitted up to a point. That is where the effort should have been. These questions were inappropriate at the front end because obviously they focused on conservative groups, which they shouldn't have, and it was really in many ways a waste of resources.
So worst case scenario, it was harassment of organizations. Best case scenario, it was kind of a fishing expedition that really makes the IRS look bad.
That's exactly right.
All right, Ken Gross, thank you very much. Election law expert and former counsel to the Federal Election Commission.
Thank you.
This is The Takeaway.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.